Hi, everyone. Been in India for the last month, along with 33 other folks. Asha and David, Durga and Vidura led the pilgrimage. Edwin was there, Marilyn, Sylvia, and a bunch of others. And forgive me if I'm not looking at you. You've heard a little bit from Tyagini a couple of weeks ago, and Tushti was there too. Tushti. I'm still Joe. Okay? You don't have to ask. It was quite a blessed time, and I want to tie it in a little bit to the talk today. But first, let me just talk a little bit about India, because that's kind of what's on the mind here. I guess the main thing that really struck me about it is that they're just like us, you know, people just like us. It was really interesting to me, mostly, being at a satsang, a gathering with Swami Kriyananda, which we were fortunate to do right at the beginning of the pilgrimage, a few different times. It was great. And then right at the end, we were able to visit with him also. He has a monthly satsang at large for anybody who wants to come there. And so, you know, he talks. And then he'll ask for questions. And questions that I heard from the Indians there were just really striking, because over and over and over again, it's, how do I make these spiritual teachings work with my real life? You know, how do I live with integrity, essentially? How do I not cut corners in my daily life? And you may recall, Swami wrote a series of lessons, Material Success Through Yoga Principles, which has been, a year or two now since he wrote that? And he did that in response to a doctor coming to him when Swami was in the hospital, one of many times, and the doctor essentially just felt drawn to sit down with Swami and say, "Sir, I really want to live by these teachings, but my two sons are in college. I need to make money to support them." You know, underlying all this is essentially, in order to be a success, I have to kind of cut corners, and, you know, morally as well as materially, how do I live this? And you hear this over and over and over again. And it struck me not so much that things, you know, are not moral or full of integrity there, but that people have the same questions there as we do here. I mean, it's easy to kind of romanticize India because it's the land where all these incredible spiritual teachers come from and where they have specialized in that internal reality, whereas we've specialized in the material reality. It's easy to romanticize it a little and think that, you know, everybody there is just, you know, like almost ready to merge into Brahman, as the reading said today. And they are, just like we are, but they have the same kind of veils preventing them from doing that, just like we do. The one thing that's different there is that God is just commonly understood. You know, we tend in the West to be a little more skeptical, our scientific attitude, you know, which is good, because we don't want to just believe things because it's been passed down from our forefathers. You know, we want to really know that it's true for ourselves. So we have kind of a sort of a stand back attitude, you know, prove it to me. And in India, they just know that God exists. They know it from thousands of years back. And it's just a given. And yet, on the other hand, the way that it's expressed often is in perhaps going to the temple, you know, doing a quick little puja or offering, and it's kind of like, you know, being raised Catholic, the idea of, okay, you do your thing, going to Sunday Mass, and you've sort of, you know, checked off the list your obligation to not go to hell, you know, sort of thing, and whatever the equivalents are of the other religions. But it's kind of new for them there to realize that, oh, this isn't just something where I go to the temple and do my puja, and then I live my life separately from that. I mean, of course, there's people that know how to integrate all that, but it's, you know, we're so fortunate and blessed on this path to have the opportunity to live this life in community with examples around us like, you know, Asha, David, all the other ministers of Swamiji, of course, even though he's in India physically now, and Master behind him and God behind him. But just showing us how to make these teachings real, we kind of take it for granted now because we're just used to that concept. But it's still relatively new there to realize that you can make this something that is just touching all aspects of your life. And that it's, you know, it's so easy for us to be caught in the old forms. So I found that inspiring. And Swami's response to that over and over again was community, basically. You know, they don't have community there. They've got the Ananda members and the new, you know, people from India that are coming and being part of all that. And it's a big team and it's expanding all the time. But they're still living in private homes. There's no community. There's no land. There's no place where people can really come together and experience that in daily life. And Swami wants with all his heart to make that happen. We are blessed to have that here, Palo Alto, Ananda Village, etc. And just the other day, actually, in our temple, in the community, our new temple there, somebody was visiting, and they just came and, you know, they asked for where the restroom was. We pointed them over to Master's kitchen and up the stairs, and then they walked back across the courtyard, and they were in the temple, and they said, "You have a community here? You know, tell me about this." And it's just so easy. I think the blessing of pilgrimage is that it gives us perspective, and that's why we go. But you don't have to, you know, pay a whole bunch of money and go away for a whole month to India on the other side of the world. It's great, and we could tell you stories forever. But pilgrimage is really inside of the heart, and it's a matter of opening up to say, "God, okay, I'm on this certain track in my life, but I'm not merging into Brahman." I have to segue a little bit here, because when we had one of our meetings with Swamiji, you know, he's had physical challenges lately. For a long time. Not only just, you know, age and the usual kinds of things, but you just know that he's just taking on karma from other people and just helping out. His whole soul motive is to help us. And I have a feeling that he would be gone a long time ago if it weren't for that. He wants to serve Master. He wants to help us. And he's writing a book now called The Second Coming of Christ that is about the Bible in the same way his writing on the Bhagavad Gita was about the Gita. He's struggling with that because it's not as clear, you know, an inspiration as the other one was. And the excerpts that he's written are fabulous. But he really has to work at this one a lot more. So it's a lot of effort on his part. And on the physical plane, it's not easy in India. There's a lot of air pollution and such there that make it hard for Westerners who aren't acclimated to it to, you know, just kind of get through without having various kinds of health challenges, and that's not easy on Swamiji. So when we had our satsang with him, you know, he was kind of referring to the fact that he just really doesn't want to hang around that much, but he's doing it because of the things that he has to do. And one of us referred to, you know, well, you know, we'll look forward to meeting on the astral plane. It sounds like a positive thing, but Swami said, "I have no interest in the astral plane." He says, "All I want to do is merge into Brahman." And you realize that that's where he's at. And, it, you know, for those who are new or whatever, what we're talking about is just, well, you know, you look up and you see all these quotes from Yogananda around here from the poem that he wrote, Samadhi, which the whole poem is in the back wall on that frame there, describing that state of cosmic consciousness. This ties into the prodigal son, because that story that's so touching about leaving home, squandering your wealth, coming back again. You know, on a cosmic level, of course, it refers to our souls being separated from God, going through all these adventures that we go through. And yet somehow we know that no matter what we do out there, you know, that that's not really going to bring us that happiness we seek, even though we think it will. All that outward stuff that we do, it never provides the answer. The answer is always, as all the great teachers say, within. You know, seek the kingdom of God within. And it doesn't mean that we have to struggle to find something that isn't us. The beauty of it, the beauty of the teachings that every religion tells us, is that we have the answer already. You know, we're so used to stressing in Silicon Valley to make things happen. But the fact is that when we just relax and pay attention to what's ours already, you know, suddenly we find that our Father is there welcoming us with open arms. We have to find a politically correct equivalent for killing the fatted calf, but you get the idea, you know. It's just like your home. You know, welcome back. And I found, what was that, Larry? I'll catch you afterwards. by the way, just because I'm thinking of Larry, Larry's got a heart procedure operation tomorrow. And so I just want us all to include him and Dolores and family in our prayers. It's a positive thing, but, you know, it's a challenge to go through that. there's always the kinds of concerns and things, but it's just such a delight to see them here just charging away like they always do. But I just want you to know that you're in our prayers for all that, so we'll hold you in that. But the prodigal son, that whole story, the experience that I had in India that really meant the most to me was just those times when you're slowing down enough in a special place. Like, the things that come to mind are in Master's home in Calcutta, the room in which he prayed before coming to America that it was the right thing to do, and he wanted, you know, God's approval and confirmation. You know, his guru had already said go. He just, you know, he had visions. He knew it was the right thing dharmically. He predicted to friends. But still, he wanted God's touch. And so, as it says in the autobiography of a yogi, he just prayed so intensely that he felt like if he spent another second at it, his head would split. And at that moment, knock, 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 Babaji walks in, says, "The divine has commanded me to tell you that it's you that he wants to go to the West." That's for us, folks. You know, have you ever thought about what would it be like being with Jesus, you know, back then? Well, it's like this. You know, it's like somebody comes to bring these teachings to us to help us remember our true home, and it looks like this. You know, it passes down. You get a disciple like Swamiji who gives his life blood to help make it happen, and then the disciples that are inspired by him doing their best to make it happen, to make something like this happen, where we can come and, you know, re-inspire each other all the time. So being in that place where, you know, he gets Babaji's approval to come to the West. And then, of course, he says, "Babaji, take me with you to the Himalayas." And Babaji says, "Not now, some other time. And don't try to follow me because you won't be able to." And then he leaves and the master can't move, you know. And he sits down and just meditates deeply with great gratitude. Well, just being in that room and just having the opportunity to meditate and tune into that, there is such, all I can say is that everything that we seek, you know, whether it's going to India or in meditation or taking seclusion or making it a point to going up to Ananda Village, visiting the shrine of the masters there that has relics from all of these same places we visited, going down to master shrines in Southern California, or just the remembrance in our own hearts and our own minds, that's pilgrimage. And I'm getting choked up a little here. But when we take that deep inside, in our hearts and our minds, and we offer everything that we are up into that, we're home. You know, that's remembrance. And I'm not going to try to pretend to explain why we're in the situation of not being merged in Brahman anyway. It just makes for a good show, I guess. You know, we like that. But it's so much fun to come home again. And so touching into those moments in India for me are the thing that really just, you know, was worth everything. And I have to say again, like I felt a couple of years ago, that, you know, we go and visit all these holy sites of all of our masters, and then we come back full circle again and we visit with Swamiji. And I think that what Ananda is doing there and what Swamiji is doing is so vital and dynamic and so important. Dhyana Smith had just had a Kriya initiation where 50 new Kriya bonds happened. And in another city, 20 new Kriya bonds, and another 30. Pam Peterson's there helping her out. And Ramurti and Sita are there doing great, even though they're having struggles with the respiratory kind of stuff and all that. But there's just dynamic energy happening there. And, you know, it's easy, again, to romanticize that that's where the dynamic stuff is happening. Oh, I want to be there. Well, here's where the dynamic stuff is happening, too. You know, right here in Silicon Valley, there are so many people that are looking for answers in their lives and trying to come home again and find out how. And, you know, you read in the Bible a little more detail that the son that went out, he's groveling with pigs and, you know, begging from the person that he's working for just a few scraps. It gets pretty bad. But basically that refers to just that we're so caught up in materialism that we just forget all about the inner nurturing, you know, our true home in that way. So take pilgrimage inside, no matter where it is. And whatever inspires you, like I said, seclusion, you know, if you haven't had a chance to just, you know, carve out a period of time to get away from that busy, involved kind of thing that tends to take us out a little bit, just say, wait a minute, I know in my heart I need to devote time to God that's more than just my daily meditation. Let me, you know, schedule a seclusion right now. Call up Christmas and New Year's, you know, whatever period of time you have, if it feels like the right thing to do, to spend a day or two or three or a week or something where it's just you and God having that pilgrimage, that remembrance. That kind of time that we spend is worth more than all this busy life that we have. And then what happens is we remember who we are. We feel that joy of remembrance. That's what all the great masters are here to share, that absolute joy of knowing who we really are, and then they want to help us remember. They're such cheerleaders for us. So we get to be that too. When we get in that place of pilgrimage, we take it deep inside, we feel it, we remember it, and then we're able to go out and do likewise. God can use us as channels, as instruments that way. I think that's all I want to say at the moment. We have a discipleship ceremony. There is something else I want to say. We had a chance to do a similar discipleship ceremony in Master's boyhood home in Calcutta in the attic room where he said, this is where I found God in this lifetime. So by renewing our discipleship vows there, that was very, very special. And likewise here, people who have just recently completed the series of meditation steps that have brought them to the point, well, I'm stealing Raghu's thunder here, so why don't you come on up and explain what discipleship is all about.